time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Sup, sup, sup. Happy Monday, everybody. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Vanessa and Gallant right here, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Just me riding solo for this two-hour matinee. So we're going to be very talkative with y'all. You know how to get aboard. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. You can also tweet me if you so choose, @GallantSays, or text those various numbers. You can also comment on Twitch. A lot of stuff to dive into today. We have some clarity on perhaps where things stand between the Houston Astros and Carlos Correa. We will get to that. And we also got clarity on what's going on with Deshaun Watson on Friday. A grand jury declined to indict Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson. It's weird to say Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson. I think we've all been under the assumption that, yeah, it's over. Anyway, following the investigation sparked by lawsuits filed by 22 women, a grand jury in Harris County returned 9 no bills on 9 criminal complaints presented to it. Doesn't need a unanimous vote, but basically they, in the one person that they had testify, I guess did not see enough to proceed with any criminal charges. Afterwards, this is courtesy of Brooks Cabina from the Houston Chronicle, Deshaun Watson spoke. He was pretty emotional, paused for a moment before he started talking before he said this.
It's definitely a very emotional moment for me. I know we're far from being done of handling what we need to handle on the legal side, but today is definitely a big day, and I thank my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for, you know, letting the truth be heard. And I think everyone that was a part of this, of seeing and hearing both sides, and that's what my point and my team wanted to do, is have a fair slate of us telling our side of the story, and letting the conclusion come down to what happened today, and that's what the grand jury decided on. So, yeah, thank you, and I thank my Lord and Savior.
So that's Deshaun Watson, everybody, and that's on Friday. And Deshaun Watson would tweet on Friday afternoon, "When you stand on the truth, the Lord will free you." Prayers up emoji. Meanwhile, David Mulugeta tweeted, "Keep the same energy, dot, dot, dot." You heard an emotional Watson there. In addition, it feels like mildly celebratory, which I can understand why. Facing criminal charges versus facing civil charges, entirely different. Having to settle this thing out of court is now perhaps what's up next for Deshaun Watson. And we'll see, because tomorrow, I believe that's when we move on to the actual civil cases that are against Deshaun here. But I found it interesting just the energy that they left said press conference with. Okay, you're going to really tweet out afterwards, "When you stand on the truth, the Lord will free you." Can we wait? Can we wait a little bit before we start getting celebratory over the fact that you're still being looked at for 22 allegations of sexual misconduct? Huh? I mean, are you exonerated completely? No, you're not. So let's tone it down a little bit, Deshaun Watson. Let's tone it down a little bit, Dave Mulugeta. So what's next? Well, I mean, you might have seen yesterday that one of the possible destinations for Deshaun Watson as far as a trade partner no longer is. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they're going to have Tom Brady under center next year. We also saw over the weekend that Kirk Cousins of the Minnesota Vikings, who were thinking about things with Deshaun Watson, I think perhaps quarterback alternatives, they decided to give Kirk Cousins an extension. So the list continues to dwindle, even though now it does seem like Deshaun Watson is a lot easier to move. So where the hell is he going to end up? Here to take a look at things in old Vegas. The Seahawks, don't tell Seahawks fans this, though. They have been quite morally superior to you in their disgust for the idea of Deshaun Watson under center. They were very mean to me on the internet. I was on vacation. I don't like that, Seattle. Come on, be cool. The Texans are plus 500 to have Watson next season under center. The Browns plus 700. Eagles plus 800. Dolphins, same, plus 800. The Saints and Steelers, meanwhile, plus 1,000. The Panthers and the Saints have already sent trade proposals in, but the Panthers, remember, Watson said no, which is surprising. But then you take a look at where they're at going forward, where you're not sure if Matt Rhule is going to be able to keep his job, and Ben McAdoo is their offensive coordinator. I can understand why Watson might say no to that one. The Panthers actually, though, have something that you like. They have an early pick. There's not a lot of picks that they're going to be able to give you for this year's draft. The Saints, who apparently never wanted Deshaun Watson while Sean Payton was there, are also interested. Do the Saints really have a lot to offer you at this point in time? I'm a little relieved that we are going to see the Texans potentially get some sort of return for Watson and that we can put this whole thing behind us. But I don't think we're as close to having this whole thing behind us as maybe Watson thought on Friday. I think we're going to have to wait a little bit more. And it's unfortunate because if you've been watching the way that things have been going, we're all depressed covering, watching this god-awful football team that is continuing to do the exact same stuff that they did last offseason. I get it, it's early, but the moves that the Texans have made to this point, Chris Moore, one-year deal. Chris Conley, one-year deal. Jeff Driscoll, no longer just a tight end, also a quarterback. He's back. Cedric Abuihi, remember him? He's back. One-year deal. Seeing everything happen the way that it's happening and also realizing that, yes, even if Deshaun Watson's absolutely despicable, he's going to be somebody, he's going to be somewhere else pretty damn soon. It makes you wonder, like, okay, well, how much different is this thing going to get in the near future, in the long-term future? They're really doing the exact same stuff that they did last offseason. I get it, because you don't think that you're a legit contender. I also understand it from the perspective of what player is in his right mind going to want to sign with the Houston Texans this offseason. Who's going to want to do that? But at the same time, to see that, yes, you're maybe going to be able to move Watson, but not to many of the teams that would probably give you the best return, seeing as Denver's out of the mix too with the Russell Wilson trade. And then you just see them continuing to do the same thing. I can understand some perhaps concern over the Nick Caserio era. We will see. There's plenty of time. It's a Monday. We're only a couple of days removed from, you know, what took place with the Deshaun Watson matters on Friday. And, of course, no criminal charges being put on him. I've never gone to, grand jury. I don't think that's something that you can pay for tickets to go to. But it is surprising taking a look at just the way that things went. 22 people have been raising various issues about things that they did not like that Deshaun Watson did. And that the grand jury only wanted to see, I guess, one of the alleged victims. That's surprising. Because there were people there that were ready to testify. I think this is the New York Times, Kevin Draper. They only wanted to hear from one of the alleged victims. I don't know why you would only ask for one of those victims. Unless you're maybe looking at this and not thinking you have that much to go against him with, that much evidence or something like that. But it is surprising because the way that things have been over the last couple of months, I can understand, I guess, even though I'm not sure I agree with it, why someone like David Mulugeta is going to say afterwards, keep that same energy, .. It's strange. It is strange to see the way that this is all, I guess, from the criminal side of things, come to a head. Now, I guess we're going to try to figure out what the hell happens with Deshaun Watson as far as an actual suspension or something like that. The NFL is kind of just a random spinning wheel of punishments, so I don't know that we're going to see for a while what kind of suspension Watson might get. I saw Pro Football Talk put up the idea that maybe, just maybe, they'll do sort of what they did to Antonio Brown, where Antonio Brown got suspended, even though there was nothing, I guess, official that had stuck against him, because he, too, settled something out of court. But there weren't 22 things against Antonio Brown. There's been a lot, that's for damn sure, with Antonio Brown over the entirety of that crazy person's career. Good God. But in this situation, how many teams are still willing to trade for Deshaun Watson? And what is Watson going to face? Because I really, on Friday, I feel like they both Deshaun Watson, Rusty Harden, Damon Legata. I guess all three of them. I think they all think they're out of the woods. And I don't know. Can we really go that far? The way that they are, the energy that they are keeping, as Damon Legata says, is very aggressive. Yeah, we were right. Energy. Were they? I mean, again, 22 allegations. Come on. Hard to say. Yeah, Deshaun Watson, not creepy at all. Stand-up guy. Model citizen. Can't really do that. Number to jump aboard on Vanessa and Gallant, 713-780-3776. You can also text in at that very same number, 713-780-ESPN. No, Vanessa, she'll be back tomorrow. It's ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. What's the latest with Carlos Correa? Is Carlos Correa going to be a part of the Houston Astros? Things are looking pretty good. You will hear why next.
This is ESPN 97.5. Real fun sports. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. Here's the latest when it comes to the Houston Astros and Carlos Correa. Late last night, we saw Mark Berman of Fox 26 tweet this out. Astros owner Jim Crane said he would re-engage with free agent shortstop Carlos Correa. The Astros have done that. Our team has reached out to his agent. We're in discussions. Okay. You put that out there if you're the owner, of course, because you want everyone to believe, even if you aren't actually doing it, that you are trying to re-sign one of your best players. Otherwise, you look like a bunch of pores. You look like the Rays. You look like the A's. But what's really interesting is what we got from Buster Olney just today. I'm going to go to his Twitter to fill you in on the latest. As agents have noted, given the offers Carlos Correa got before the lockout, his previous agency would be in position to claim a majority of whatever he gets in a multi-year deal. Correa signs for 1 year now. New agent Scott Boras gets all the money of a new deal next winter. That means that there's a short-term deal potentially on the table. And that is something that means that they could probably bring him back. Only continued to tweet, if Carlos Correa takes a deal with the Astros that allows him to test the market again next fall, he'd be joining a bunch of other big-name free agents where maybe he would be competing with them, shortstops in particular, for big-time contracts. Tim Anderson, Trey Turner, Xander Bogaerts. If he opts out of his deal in Boston, I would assume that he would. Darby Swanson as well. But per Olney, agents have been predicting for weeks Correa could take a deal in the range of 6 years with the Astros too. Short-term and long-term, but it would be at a high salary with an opt-out after the first year. What a weird contract that would be. But that is something I think you should put on the table. And it's a smart one to give yourself a little bit of flexibility to perhaps, if you are Carlos Correa, say things don't go so well this coming season. Say you get hurt, seeing as Correa has missed a ton of games over the last 4 years or so. You want to be able to still have that long-term deal because maybe you're not going to be looked at when you're competing with all those other guys in the next offseason. But I think it's pretty interesting to see, courtesy of Buster Olney, that there's a chance, there's definitely a chance that he's going to be back with the Astros. I mean, makes sense. You really want to move in another direction at shortstop? I don't think you want to sign anyone to a $300 million contract or $400 million contract, because if you just take a look at the way that that generally works out, it doesn't work out, or it doesn't give you anything. You know, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, of California, of the United States, etc. How many big-time contracts have they had over the last couple of years? You know, they got Rendon now. They got, on top of that, you have Mike Trout's contract, too. And what does that get you? Fourth place? You know, you could really hamstring yourself with one of those long, big-term, big-time contracts. Albert Pujols, that husk, what he was at the very end of that contract, he was getting paid a ton of money, too. And I'm looking, you know, at San Diego right now, and I'm wondering if they're going to be able to actually, you know, do anything of note with all those deals that they have on the books. Because it didn't really help them out, you know, that Fernando Tatis deal. Great, you got one of the best players in baseball locked up, most exciting players in baseball locked up for a really long period of time. But, I mean, $300 million, that's going to hurt you and your ability to do other things with that money. We got a tweet here. Bro, Deshaun Watson is old news. We're on Correa Watch now. I think that if we were to ask the average person, yeah, you've probably moved on from Deshaun Watson, period. And it's all about what the hell happens to Correa. The short-term kind of deal is, I think, the way to go. I'm surprised, I guess, that it's being floated, though, and that there's not as much pushback from those who would be associated with Correa, his camp, court, etc. Because I think not getting that long-term contract when you are one of the best players at your position in baseball, there's a pride factor that's there. If you're somebody that has dealt with a lot of injuries, maybe the pride is not quite an obstacle. And clearly, Correa seems to like his teammates here. You know, there's a reason that we've seen him out with Alex Bregman and Lance McCullers and folks like that. Like, clearly he has built actual relationships during his time here in Houston. But, I mean, isn't there a pride side of things where you want to get that $300 million deal, $400 million deal or something like that? Where the idea of something short-term is borderline insulting to you? I don't think so. 713-780-3776 is how you call, and you can also text in at that very same number. You can probably tell my voice is pretty hoarse. Vanessa is out. I believe Vanessa is taking a little R&R, a little vacation time, and someone on the Twitch, they suggested Daytona or something like that. Maybe. I was in Chicago this past weekend, and I don't know how I'm alive. Chicago is intense for St. Patrick's Day weekend. The weekend before the actual holiday takes place is when they, like, dye the river green. So I got to see that, but good God, I don't know. I don't know how I am walking right now. I've got sweats on, came into the studio, and I think the temperature was up to like 80 degrees. Are they trying to detox me? I don't know. Was I sweating out some of the alcohol? Can I still smell it? I don't know. I hope not. I hope that's not that smell. Whatever the case, it stank. 713-780-3776. We've got Austin. Austin joining Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Austin, what's up?
Hey, man. First of all, love the new show, guys.
Thank you.
I've been doing great. Yeah, I work for Amazon, so I drive around. I'm not like a delivery driver, but just listen to y'all, man. Trust me, I really enjoy the content.
Thank you.
So my question, not my question, but kind of a thought of this Correa contract I kind of came up with. 10-year deal, opt-out after the first year for Correa, an option that could turn either as a kind of like a team option, more or less, or like a player option after the sixth or seventh year. And what it is kind of like how I heard about the Verlander contract, how it's like you have to play a certain amount of innings or pitch a certain amount of innings or games or whatnot, and if he doesn't reach that threshold, then the Astros can get out of the contract, right? They don't. That second year isn't guaranteed for Verlander. Why not do the same thing for Correa? Let's say just call after the seventh year, right? Because I think Correa wants obviously that longer term. Let's say if Correa doesn't play a certain amount of games, let's say 70-80% of the games that Correa doesn't play,
which is a good chance, right?
It turns into a team option, and if he does, then he can do a player option, say he can opt out and try to get more money. Maybe. All right. What do you think about that?
I mean, look, that's something that you would want to do, but I feel like the way that you're looking at it is entirely like the Astros way of looking at it, you know? And I wonder, is Carlos Correa, you know, the first part that you mentioned, the flexibility at first, that's definitely going to be the biggest key. But down the road where you're talking, you know, a 10-year deal where at the end of year six or seven or something like that, I would assume the Astros would be able to pull out because of the things that you were listing. I don't know if Scott Boras is going to be somebody that would accept a deal that is worked out in that kind of a way. I think that he would look at that and he would say, no, I want to be making as much back as I possibly can as an agent for as long as I possibly can. And, you know, these big-time albatross contracts, I don't know that all of a sudden guys like Boras are just going to say, yeah, we're going to give teams who we are already in a battle with or have been in a battle with, kind of accusing them of being cheap. I don't know if they're going to give that kind of flexibility back. I would definitely ask for it, though, Austin. I think you're on the right track in terms of asking for it.
Yeah, I just honestly think that like, just some type of protections where, like, I mean, obviously Correa has had his injury issues, so it's more or less just try to see what they can work with. I mean, and maybe it could go in sooner, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just because then at least it gives Correa, again, just security. But then also, again, like you said, it can turn into a player option. So let's say instead of, he'll be, what, 33 after, say, year six. So let's say if it's after year five, right, he'll be 32, whatever. He can still probably, if he's still doing well, he can probably still get another big contract. And then at that point, remember, the max right now is like what? Maybe what max is for a positional player, maybe $35 million a year. So, you know, that's probably the max right now. So you can look at and probably do, maybe you can try to go for 40 around that same time frame. Obviously, okay. And it won't be a 10-year deal, but maybe a 5-year deal at 40. That technically will be more money in that aspect.
Okay. I appreciate the phone call, Austin, on that front. Look, I mean, if they can make that deal happen, great. Please go for it. I would just say, again, that down the road thing, I don't know that they're going to be willing to sign off on that. Because it's not just pressure, Boris trying to pressure Correa into giving the deal that helps Boris out the most. It's the pressure that the rest of the players are going to put on somebody of Correa's talent. Even if he does miss a ton of games, I think they're going to look at that and think to themselves, oh no, we're all of a sudden going in the other direction. We're going to go away from these long-term deals where someone like Albert Pujols can make it. And it's funny because we're only talking about like the top 1% of players that can even get a kind of deal like this. Someone texted in, you think Correa would sign for 5 for $200 million or something like that, 6 for $240 million, because he would be making more annually than Lindor on that front. That comes from Dennis. I think you definitely float that out there, but what happens at the end of that contract? Is Correa going to end up getting like one-year deals the rest of his career? I think you do really have to wonder about the durability with him, just given the track record, which sucks because just from a selfish I like him perspective, ever since he grabbed the microphone and was essentially looking into the cameras and telling all of those people who call the Astros cheaters to go like piss off, essentially. I mean, the man became my hero on that front. I just loved it. I loved that somebody, instead of being like, yeah, okay, we're just going to keep it close to the vest. No, he basically told everyone to go bleep themselves. It was awesome. The problem is, you can't make decisions entirely based off of sentimentality, especially if you're in the Astros' shoes. If you're like the Mets, or you're the Dodgers, or you're the Yankees, and you're these teams that really I just don't think care that much ultimately when it comes to money. If they need to go over a certain amount, they can. I don't know that the Astros are there. I would like to believe that they are, but I think we're being honest. If Jim Crane's showing his books compared to those other guys, I think there's going to be a massive gap. And you know, you take a look at why the Astros were maybe one of the teams that weren't so thrilled about the deal, the CBA that was actually struck. Because I think they were one of four teams that were sitting back. I'm sure that there was a part of Jim Crane who was like, it's great that we've been one of the best teams in baseball over the last couple of years, but can we really keep this going? How long can we keep this going? Let's get flexibility added into every single contract that we throw out there, like with a Verlander or with a Correa going forward. He probably realizes, yeah, this is not going to last that long. It's a lot of money to be putting up front. And, I mean, I'd love to believe that we live in this world of baseball where everyone's on equal footing. You know, it's not. It's not quite like the NFL. Where in the NFL, you don't really think about teams having cash issues, even though, like, the Saints clearly do. The Bengals are clearly cheap. Number to jump aboard. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. You can also tweet me, at Gallant Says. Vanessa Richardson. It's Vanessa and Gallant. Vanessa's out on a little vacation today, so you're stuck with just me. Pinche Pancho Villa says, he told Cody Bellinger to stuff it. I like it. I like it. He went a little further with comments and taking shots against other co-hosts, though. I can't sit by and idly, you know, let you do that, Pinche Pancho Villa. You're taking shots at Cody. I feel like I'm going to take a look right into that camera, deep into your soul, and do the same thing back. You don't talk about us like that. No, you do not. It was awesome the way that he did it. Everything got so quiet after the fact. And I know for a lot of y'all, you're so sick of hearing about those cheating allegations. When I was up in Seattle, I wasn't allowed to talk about it. Because everyone was like, whenever I brought it up, I would be like, yeah, well, if you take a look here and there. And basically, I was explaining it away. Because I root for the Patriots and Astros, so I'm cool with cheating. Like, I don't care. They didn't take the trophy away. It's fine. It's cool. You know? Just adds a little flair to the way that they were able to do it. But whenever I brought it up, everyone would get so mad. But there is a part of me that kind of is curious about why everyone just shut up at the same time about it. And my theory is that it was a lot of it going on, and baseball realized that if anyone talks about it at all, again, that more digging will be done. But I mean, shoot, it just stopped. No one talked about the sign stealing at all since then. There's been, you know, assumptions made, pointing, done at the Astros since then, but it just stopped, like, completely. Crazy to me. I'm Paul Gallant. It's Vanessa and Gallant again, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Up next. what's going on around the NFL. One team seems to be falling apart completely. Plus, are what the Texans doing thus far, is it annoying you? Because it's annoying me. I'll tell you what that is next.
This is Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5. Go Bucks.
You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Vanessa's on vacation. I'm Paul Gallant. You want to jump in, you know how to do it. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. This comes courtesy of Chandler Rome from spring training. Lance McCullers of the Astros will not start the season on time. Per Dusty Baker, he had a setback or two this winter while rehabbing. Baker is optimistic McCullers will pitch for the Astros this season. Maybe that's what McCullers is somewhat referring to when in his interview with our guy, talking about how, yeah, I would like to be able to go back into the team facilities, but I can't. Part of that was probably him looking at the situation between the owners and the players and thinking, okay, well, this is a way that I can put a little leverage out there, get a little bit of public favor in the corner of everybody who is backing the players too, get a little bit more PR done. But to hear that he's not going to start it on time, it does have me a little concerned. And, you know, if we're taking a look at more notes that are coming out of spring training for the Houston Astros, that's the big news that came out today. Jake Meyers is ahead of schedule in his rehab, so that's nice, throwing and hitting. But McCullers is concerning because with McCullers, it's sort of like with Correa. I trust those guys when they're out there, but the injuries just seem to happen so much. You can't really predict them if they're all over the place, but when they do happen on a somewhat regular basis, and these guys are two of your most important players, you still have a lot of depth, pitching-wise, maybe less so, but in your lineup you clearly do. But how do you feel when you're hearing this as we open things up into spring training? It's a little bit of a bummer. Real quick annoyance on the Texans, and again, it's a one little thing. But I thought, I was hoping that we would see something more aggressive that sounds more aggressive than what's happening. I saw that the Patriots re-signed Devin McCourty to a one-year, $9 million deal. And maybe Devin McCourty was never going to leave the New England Patriots. He's been playing there his entire career. But I look at him as somebody that I would want to bring in because he is a veteran quality player, and I would be willing to overpay to bring him in. Maybe Deshaun Watson's contract situation and the fact that he's not yet off the books, he cleared $24 million, is limiting the Texans and their ability to actually do anything that would make our eyebrows raise. But I saw that on Friday they had Malcolm Butler in for a visit, another former Patriot. And I'm assuming that we're going to see a lot of former Patriots potentially walk through the building and maybe they get a deal. I know Kyle Van Noy is another linebacker that maybe the Texans decide to bring in. And I know a lot of you guys are rolling your eyes. And you should. Malcolm Butler is not good anymore. The Cardinals thought that they were getting a very good version of Malcolm Butler when they signed him this offseason, or at least a competent version of Malcolm Butler. He wasn't that guy anymore. But otherwise, okay, Chris Moore, Chris Conley, they're back. Great. Jeff Driscoll, Cedric Abuihi. It's looking a lot like the same stuff we saw last offseason. Maybe that's all you can really expect this offseason, but good God, is this going to just be like this every single offseason now? A minor annoyance. It is interesting to see what's happening with the Dallas Cowboys, though. Because the Dallas Cowboys, they're trying their best to keep everything intact. The trade that they made, sending Amari Cooper away to the Cleveland Browns, it is not a very good haul that they got. They trade Amari Cooper in a sixth-round pick to Cleveland for a fifth and a sixth. That is not much. I'm not going to act like Amari Cooper is worthy of a first or a second round pick or something like that. But it sort of shows you that Dallas is in this spot where I don't really know how good they're going to be this coming season. And that's saying something given that the NFC East is trash. That's an awful division. You know, the Eagles are the best team in that division, and the Eagles are a team that you don't even know who their quarterback is going to be next season. And I feel like you can say that about the Cowboys, who did kick the Eagles' ass down the stretch, because this isn't the only situation that they have to figure out. Since Ezekiel Elliott has that $18 million cap hit, basically, if they were to cut him, they would be killing $30 million worth of cap space. So they're trying to trade Lyle Collins, but they're saying that they'll likely cut him if they can't find a trade. So that's what happens. You get a fifth or a sixth round pick when you have a contract that's terrible like that, and you still want to get something back in return for a guy that you realize is essentially just going to be a cap casualty. Greg Zuerlein, they cut him. Blake Jarwin. They're saying DeMarcus Lawrence is going to stay. Sure. I don't know if I buy into that. But definitely interesting to see what the Dallas Cowboys have been doing over the last couple of days. It's Vanessa and Gallant right here. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-3776 is how you call in. You can also text in 713-780-ESPN. Vanessa on vacation. At Gallant says for me on Twitter. You can also watch on Twitch. Twitch.tv/ESPN975. So keep you posted on anything that goes on with the Houston Astros. I am sure that over the course of this morning, it sounds like there's a media availability going on, that we'll find out more things about the Astros as we get into the season. I just saw those ones as we came into this segment. So also, I found this to be surprising. How many of y'all even remember Colin Kaepernick? I know. I mean, Did you think that he was just completely off the face of the earth? I did. And this weekend, I thought it was really funny to see all of these people that were doing the same thing that they used to do with Colin Kaepernick, where insert team, throw out his name, say, why not? And then watch your Twitter blow up. Watch your engagements blow up. The guy apparently... and he did it on Friday, I guess, right as the Deshaun Watson stuff was wrapping itself up. He does it on Friday where he just shows himself like working out in shorts. Stay working. And then afterwards, he was asked, I guess, about like, hey, well, what could the future potentially hold for you? For the past 5 years, I've been working out and staying ready in case an opportunity to play presented itself. I'm really grateful to my trainer, who I've been throwing to all this time. But man, do I miss throwing to professional route runners. Who's working? I will pull up. I'm just annoyed that he finds a way to insert himself back into things. And look, I think there actually was an 18-minute period where Kaepernick made some decent points about why he was taking a knee. But all the stuff that he did afterwards with the pig cop, you know, socks and stuff like that, it was like, okay, dude, now you're just trolling aggressively. Or before, when he had that stupid post. Remember that post that he had where... there was like a picture of like flooding in Houston for some reason. I think this was a picture of, you know, the Montrose Bridge area and how that area kind of gets dicey from time to time. There's cars like up on the side of the road. And he decided to put in seven orms coming, like seven torms coming. Storms coming. It's me. I'm the storm. Like this was before all the, you know, comments that he was making about kneeling and all that stuff. The guy was the worst in that situation. And he was a little bit annoying after the fact as well. And now he's being annoying again. I don't know. I was just annoyed that he was all of a sudden occupying my timeline with all sorts of space after just being completely missing in action for a very, very long period of time. Oh, now you're back? Huh? Annoying. Where do you think Deshaun Watson's going to end up? I'm thinking off the top of my head that those two teams that seem to be most interested in him are the Panthers and the Saints. This is from Aaron Wilson about 20 minutes ago or so on Twitter of Pro Football Network. Texans quarterback Deshaun Watson's representatives have go-ahead to discuss potential fits with the Carolina Panthers and the New Orleans Saints, other teams in the next few days, with the team still having to sign off on any trade parameters if he'll waive a no-trade clause per league sources. Is he going to actually waive a no-trade clause to go to either of those two organizations? I mean, the Saints aren't the Saints without Sean Payton. They're not. They're not the Saints without Drew Brees. In fact, the Saints are the Aints. The Saints always, you know, I know there's some Saints fans listening right now, but, I mean, in a non-Sean Payton world, would you want to play for that organization? I mean, congratulations to them on figuring out how to do gymnastics with the salary cap every single year, but are you going to want to go there? I don't think he would. But that is one of the places that, at least as far as the odds go, are up there. Plus 1,000, Deshaun Watson to the New Orleans Saints, which is after the Seahawks at plus 450, the Texans at plus 500, the Browns at plus 700, the Eagles at plus 800, and the Dolphins are also at plus 800 as well. So you're not at the very top, but the Panthers, you notice, aren't even on the board there. And yet we keep hearing about the Panthers and about the Saints. I don't think he's going to want to go to either of those two teams. And if he's not going to go to either of those two teams, then where the hell is he going to end up? Like, really, the Seahawks seem like they're the only logical option. Unless you want to do something really crazy. Which hasn't been proposed that much. I guess there's just an acceptance that he's not going to be here next year. And that a lot of people are perhaps so tired of how long this saga has taken. Which really only has been about a year with all the allegations that have come out against him. Is there anybody here that thinks, keep him. See what happens. See if he wants to come back to this situation. We'll find out on Tuesday, I think, more details from the actual case itself. We'll see whether or not there's anything that he says in civil court that potentially makes it out into the public that makes teams maybe a little bit more squeamish when they look at him. But I'm guessing they're all going to look the other way, like they, you know, have done for the entirety of their history, for guys like Antonio Brown, Greg Hardy, et cetera, Kareem Hunt, when he got that extra opportunity as well. I'm guessing they're all going to look the other way. But I don't know. Maybe something does end up coming out over the next couple of days and things change just a little bit on that front. 713-780-3776 is how you call in. 713-780-ESPN to text as well. At Gallant says on Twitter, Vanessa's on vacation. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant right here. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Years of research and innovation. Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
We're all trying to figure out where Deshaun Watson's going to end up. We're also going to hopefully have a resolution to Carlos Correa's almost exit from the Houston Astros fairly soon. But things are looking very, I think, positive, as we have seen over the last 24 hours or so. First off, because the Astros, they said that they've reached out to Carlos Correa's agent. Second, we're hearing that there is potentially a deal that the Astros could present to Correa that would give Correa the ability to actually go back into free agency next offseason. And add this into the mix. The Yankees made a big move yesterday. They got Josh Donaldson in a trade with the Minnesota Twins, which is really interesting. I don't know why these two have beef, but did you know that Josh Donaldson and Gerrit Cole apparently don't like each other? I was reading a Yankee blogger write-up on the report, and it surprised me that they would bring in somebody into a clubhouse that does not seem like to be, I don't know, the toughest place, the strongest place. It definitely doesn't seem like old Yankee teams of the past. You know, you sort of look at the Yankees now, and are you concerned about them? I don't know. They're kind of just there. I feel like as far as teams in the American League that actually concern me, it's generally always going to end up being Oakland in some way, shape, or form. It's Boston. But I don't know. I don't really look at New York. And this Josh Donaldson trade, again, is it really a big deal if two guys, one's a pitcher, one's a position player, if they don't like each other? But I don't know. That was surprising to see that they made that move. But that definitely takes a team that has the kind of purchasing power in the Yankees to sign Carlos Correa off the board, too. Would have been a weird fit if they brought him in. Honestly, it just would be such a strange fit for Carlos Correa to be on any of the teams that's been involved in, you know, the wars of the American League, the wars of the World Series over the last couple of years. Just given, because I feel like everyone looks at Carlos Correa with this spite and all these current Astros players in a way like, oh, it would be disgusting if we brought him in. And I know that none of these people, fans, would actually care when these organizations bring in Correa, assuming Correa delivers, but they have no intention. This is from Bob Nightingale. The Yankees clearly have no intention and are sticking to their own to their plan all along of signing free agent shortstop Carlos Correa. They don't want to block their prized shortstop prospects. Where would Carlos Correa potentially end up? Like, say he signs a one-year deal. Is there going to be still that same kind of market? His injury history does sort of work against him here. And I feel like that actually might help the Astros potentially next offseason should they find themselves in this exact same situation. I think we're going to have a lot of that in the future. Anyway, we'll keep you posted on all things Carlos Correa this morning, but there's good news on that front. The other news coming out of Astros spring training is that Lance McCullers is not going to start the season on time, which is a bummer. That is for sure. That was from Dusty Baker just about an hour ago or so. You might have been rolling your eyes at this on Sunday night, though. Getting on the plane, flying back from Chicago after an intense weekend of drinking in Chicago for St. Patrick's Day, and all of a sudden, I get a bunch of texts. I'm like, wait, what's going on here? For those who don't know, I look at former Patriots, former Buccaneers quarterback Tom Brady as my Lord and Savior. You can't shame me for my religion. It's 2022. You can't. Paul, that's sacrilegious. Is it? It's the most consistent thing in my life for the longest, longest time. But Paul, he left you. Shut up. Anyway, Tom Brady has unretired. He tweeted this out late last night. These past 2 months, I've realized my place is still on the field and not in the stands. That time will come, but it's not now. I love my teammates. I love my supportive family. They make it all possible. I'm coming back for my 23rd season in Tampa. Unfinished business, LFG, as he says very, very often. Which means let's bleep and go, in case you didn't know. I think you look at this retirement now with a bit of a side eye. I suppose it did not turn into Brett Favre. But I feel like he was trying to do the same thing as Brett Favre in this situation. I mean, I don't think he likes Bruce Arians. And I don't really blame him for not liking Bruce Arians. If you're Tom Brady, you're going to be picky about whatever coach you work with. And even if you did have issues with Bill Belichick, you're probably looking at Bruce Arians. And especially if some of those reports that came out at the end of the season were true, where he was showing up late and it was Brady and Leftwich who were essentially working together on some of the game plans, sometimes without Arians, and Arians would come in and overrule things late. You know, perhaps not the best of situations. I do think Brady was trying to flex his way out of town in a way, shape, or form. And just the way that Arians was handling it publicly, as he is wont to do, where he doesn't really have a filter, which is fun, but also at the same time, something that you would think would get under the skin of people that work with him. I was surprised to see that. The way that he handled it, where he said, yeah, Tom Brady might like, some of these guys just like attention. And maybe that's what Brady's doing in this situation. Maybe Brady is just like all of these other guys, where he likes to have his name out there. He wanted people to discuss, talk about him. But he unretired so quickly. I mean, the league year, has it even officially started? Has it even been officially 2 months? Like, I forget what day the Buccaneers lost to the Rams, but was that legitimately 2 months ago in the NFC Championship game? Seriously, I want to know. It wasn't the NFC Championship game, my bad. It was the NFC divisional round of the playoffs. That it was this quick, that he turned around this quick and is already back. I look at the Bucs too, and I don't really think that they're in the best of shape. They were able to bring back a lot of the pieces that made things work for the Super Bowl season, but this time around, Antonio Brown sure as hell isn't coming back if Bruce Arians is still in Tampa Bay. I don't know if we'll ever see Antonio Brown in the NFL again, though I suppose you can never say never with that crazy guy because of how talented he is, but there are other situations that the Bucs have to figure out, and you've seen some of the contract restructuring that they are doing. You can be the old team 1 year after a title. Can you be the old team 2 years after a title and just roll things back out and assume that everything is going to work out in the same way that it did before? It might, I guess, but I don't know. I have some real questions about the Bucs this coming season, and I could definitely see them actually taking a step back. When I was in Seattle, I remember having this argument with my co-host where he felt that the Bucs would be not very good, probably miss the playoffs the year after winning the Super Bowl. And I just assumed, okay, well, if Brady's on the team, that's not something that's remotely possible in my mind because I believe him to be divine. But now, another year removed from it, is he really going to be able to keep everything going the same way that he was perhaps able to do it before, especially when you consider that, yeah, Bruce Arians maybe is losing his fastball a little bit as a head coach when he wasn't throwing like that fast of a fastball to begin with? Not meant to be insulting here or anything like that, but were we putting Bruce Arians on the same playing field as Belichick or today with Sean McVay? I don't know about that. It's Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. You can call in, text in too, at that very same number, 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. You can also tweet me at Gallant Says. Vanessa out. She'll be back tomorrow, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Okay, so this did not take place in the world of football, basketball, baseball, the stuff that I really care about. I'm not going to lie, this isn't meant as a shot against the sport of tennis, but I've just never really been a big tennis guy. You know, it's a little too stuffy for my taste. There is this kind of country club association that both golf and tennis have, and I don't know, as a meathead, wannabe blue-collar guy that is decidedly not blue-collar, I kind of always have looked with those two sports and just been annoyed by it. You know, the spectators, you go to a golf tournament. The only time that I feel like people are having fun is when they're at the Waste Management Open. And sure, yeah, the Masters, I'm sure it's nice when you get past the whole, I spent my entire life savings while I was here so I could eat some crappy pimento cheese sandwiches, which I don't understand the appeal of. Wow, they're $1. Congrats, they're $1. You went to the Masters and you're having a $1 sandwich. It's a cheese sandwich. It's grilled cheese. I'm sure that's going down your system. Fantastic. Not going to be just absolute magma later. Anyway, but we saw something take place in the world of tennis. And it's with somebody that has been facing a lot of criticism over the last couple of years. It's Naomi Osaka, who's probably the best tennis player, female tennis player in the world. So she was in the middle of a match against Veronika Kudermetova. And somebody in the crowd at one point yelled, "Naomi, you suck." You could actually hear it. And she didn't take it well. And look, she's been emotional, and clearly she has talked about it. She has dealt with, at least in her own way, trying to give herself the best possibility to have optimal mental health. I don't really know how you say it, too. It's so weird when we talk about that, because mental health is such a vague thing to describe so many different things, you know? And it's not me, like, being an, mental health, not real. No, not coming out here with a hot take or something like that. I just always have found it, like, weird to say, like, well, they're leaving for their mental health. What specifically, I would let you know, it's such a vague thing that you put out there. But anyway, she was crying out there. And after the match, she, even though she lost in straight sets afterwards, was asked, hey, what was going through her head? And here is Naomi Osaka.
To be honest, I've gotten heckled before, like, it didn't really bother me. But, it's, like, heckled here. Like, I've watched a video of Venus and Serena getting heckled here. And if you've never watched it, you should watch it. And I don't know why, but, like, it went into my head and it got replayed a lot. I'm trying not to cry, but I just wanted to say thank you and congratulations. Yeah, just thank you.
I feel bad for her because clearly, you know, there's a lot going through her head in that moment in time. And tennis is a sport where you're not expected to deal with anything but collapse. But I feel like we're getting to a point now, and I don't know what the line in the sand is actually going to be here, but I mean, we have basketball players who are getting mad after a game about being called Westbrook. In the case of Russell Westbrook, Naomi, you suck. Okay, I mean, at one of these bougie tennis crowds, yeah, that's going to really stand out, especially given that heckling just doesn't really happen at tennis or golf matches. But you're going to stop the match and have to stop the match to have that person removed when something like that takes place? Maybe the person that's having the mental health issues, maybe they need to just remove themselves from this situation where they could be facing things like this that could be triggering for them and have them in a bad spot like Naomi was in this spot. And I'm not like saying, hey, Naomi's wrong for feeling the way that she did. I'm just saying, like, there's a certain point where I feel like we have to say, wait, we're going to, for every single person that pays money to go to an event, if the sliding scale has already continued to slide in a way where, okay, you can get kicked out for saying suck, or you can get kicked out because you made a funny name about Russell Westbrook, where do we stop? I understand that athletes matter, their mental health matters, all those things, but there is a certain point where I think we all have to sit back and say, okay, no, that's a little bit too far. Remove this person because they said X, Y, or Z. Because who knows where it's going to stop? What if somebody said, Naomi, I'm not a big fan of your overhand. You know, is that something that's not going to be in bounds in a couple of years? And honestly, I mean, this is a side note. Why can't we have heckling at tennis? It'd be a lot more entertaining. I'm just not a tennis guy. I feel like the matches take way too long. But, you know, heckling would be fun. Booing would be fun. We see how dramatic some of these tennis players are on the court. You know, John McEnroe back in the day, like throwing his club and stuff like that. Why not have people, you know, catcalling and booing and stuff like that too? I don't know. I think it would be a more enjoyable product to me. I'm Paul Gallant, Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Coming up next, what's the latest on the Deshaun Watson front? After we heard from him on Friday, he will not face any criminal charges. What's next for him? We'll talk about that and where he could potentially end up. Don't go anywhere.
This is ESPN 97.5.